Would you just take a moment and look down at your dominant hand and just think of all of the things that you're able to do with that hand. The work that you do, the crafts that you do, the recreation that you do with that hand. And be thankful. It's a gift from God. And that's what it was for the man in our story today. He entered again, Jesus, into a synagogue. And a man was there whose hand was withered. They were watching him to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Get up and come forward." And he said to them, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to kill?" But they were silent. After looking around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out. His hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately began conspiring with the Herodians against him as to how they might destroy him. Let's look at the people here. The first man that we come across here is a man with a withered hand and a worthy heart. He was in the right place at the right time. Withered was a term that was used in the Greek to describe a plant that was without nourishment, without water. It withered. Tradition says that this man's withered hand was the result of an accident. He may have been a stonemason working with rocks. And those of you who know stonemasons know how easily it is to crush a hand when you're working with large rocks. How would he have felt? Perhaps useless, that he couldn't do that for which he was created. But he didn't use his disability as an excuse. You see, it's easy to worship the Lord when things are going well. When you're riding the wave, it's easy to come to church and worship him and sing the songs. But so often we try to hide our disabilities and our deficiencies. This man didn't. He was in the right place at the right time. And he obeyed Jesus. Jesus said to him, "Come here. Come here." The invitation to come was always there with Jesus. He might have preferred a quiet, private healing. Actually, who really likes to be singled out? Who would like to have this type of an invitation? I remember one time in a church where I pastored in the Utica area, there was a phone call and someone needed some financial help. And he said, "I have some tools that are meant to fix sewing machines. If I knew now that Mona would have a half a dozen sewing machines that it wouldn't work." No, she said she only has one, but through the years they would have come in handy. But they wanted to sell their tools. And I said, "Well, we do have a deacon's fund and we're able to help out people who have financial need." And this man, "Oh no, we don't want that kind of help." And he told me the story about how he came and was paraded in the front of a church one time. And, "Oh, you know, we're going to take care of this family." And he said it was really embarrassing for them. So this man may have wanted to have a private healing. But when Jesus says come, we need to come. And when it's for the glory of Jesus, we need to be willing to put our pride aside and simply come. And then this man, we see, demonstrated his faith in the Lord Jesus. In verse 5, Jesus said, "Stretch out your hand." Jesus asked this man to do the one thing he couldn't do. He could come. His legs were working, but his hand was withered. So Jesus said, "Stretch out your hand." I wonder how he did it. I wonder what it must have felt like when in his obedience to Jesus, he lifted up that withered hand and just started to stretch it out and to see it come back to normal. I wonder what praise was on his lips. How long he had been without the use of that hand. How long might he have had that hand in a sling and now was able to stretch it forth? We never should sacrifice the things that are possible for the things that are. God is still able to work miracles. We shouldn't be satisfied as Christians with just things that are normal. We should look for God to be working in our lives. So we see this man obedient to the Lord as he demonstrates his faith. But then we see the Pharisees. They had healthy hands, but withered hearts. And that's harder to see because you can have a withered heart and not really know it. The man could look down on his withered hand and see that there was something wrong with his hand. But how can you see into your own heart to see if it's right or to see if it's withered? Well, maybe it wasn't too hard because they found fault with others. Fault finders with critical spirits have withered hearts. In verse 2, they were watching Jesus, and they were always through chapter 2. We saw them 4 different times. They were there when Jesus was doing things, always ready to criticize. They were watching, which means they kept watch by the side of. Remember, when they healed the man, they were sitting while everybody else was standing. There was only standing room in that house, but they took the seats to judge, the judgment seats, and here they are again, waiting to judge Jesus. Psalm 37, verse 32 says, "The wicked watches for the righteous and sees to put him to death." Deuteronomy 19:15 says, "A single witness shall not rise up against a man on account of any iniquity or any sin which he has committed. On the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses, a matter shall be confirmed." And so they were there to confirm what they knew Jesus would do. The second thing we see about them and their withered heart was that they were not willing to admit they were wrong. Jesus asked them a question in verse 4. "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" The law was clear. The Jewish law was definite and detailed about this. Medical attention could be given only if a life was in danger. To take some examples, a woman in childbirth might be helped on the Sabbath. An infection of the throat might be treated. If a wall fell on anyone, enough might be cleared away to see whether he was dead or alive. If he was alive, he might be helped. If he was dead, the body must be left until the next day. A fracture could not be attended to. Cold water might not be poured on a sprained foot or hand. A cut finger might be bandaged with a plain bandage, but not with ointment. That is to say, at the most, an injury could be kept from getting worse, but it could not be made better. So that was the rule of the day. To the Pharisee, religion was ritual. It meant obeying certain rules and regulations. Jesus broke these regulations, and they were genuinely convinced that he was a bad man. It is like the man who believes that religion consists in going to church, reading the Bible, saying grace at meals, having family worship, and carrying out all of the external acts which are looked on as religious, and who yet never put himself out to do anything for anyone, who has no sense of sympathy, no desire to sacrifice, who is committed to his rigid orthodoxy and deaf to the call of need and blind to the tears of the world. Jesus said to them in Matthew 12:11-12, "What man is there among you who has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath? Will he not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? So then it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." So what would they have said to Jesus? Wait until the next day to heal him? Put it off for a day? But when Jesus asked the question in Mark 3, verse 4, they kept silent. But not only did they keep silent, they wouldn't admit they were wrong, they enlisted help from their enemies. Today we call that piling on. Pharisees were the orthodox arm of the Jewish religion of that day. We would call them, in Christian terms, fighting fundamentalists. The word Pharisee means separatist. They kept themselves separate from the world. Now, the Herodians promoted the secular culture of the day. They were the ones who backed the king, King Herod. It was strange bedfellows for them that day. The hypocrisy was evident when condemning Jesus healing on the Sabbath. They plotted his death on the Sabbath day. So the critical attitude that they had was contagious. And this is so true. It's easy to join with other people when criticizing people who aren't there, or even people who are there. You know, someone has something that they're critical of one person, and so they go to another person, and they give them all the reasons why that person isn't right with the Lord. Or maybe not right in general. And they just like to vent. You know, we should stay away from people like that. It happens oftentimes in churches. Well, you know what this one said? You know, their attitude is just wrong. Well, we don't have to make things worse, do we? By talking about those people behind their backs. They enlisted help from their enemies, and we see that happening so often, even in churches today. So what do we want? We want the holy heart of Jesus. These verses tell us that Jesus looked around, literally, with a penetrating gaze. John 2:25 says, "And because he did not need anyone to testify concerning man, for he," Jesus himself, "knew what was in a man." Have you ever had one of those people look at you that could just, they seem like they could just look through your, right to your soul? You know, someone said Jack Wertzen could preach like that. You know, he would preach and you would think, boy, he's just talking directly to me. Penetrating gaze. 2 Chronicles 16:9 says, "For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he might strongly support those whose heart is completely his." He can tell those people who belong to him and those people who don't. Should we desire his gaze? Yes, we should. Because if we're not his, we should become his, if at all possible. So Jesus looked around. And then it said, Jesus got angry. His anger built up. This is a good time of the year to talk about that word and the term building up, because it's like the sap builds up in a tree in the springtime and goes throughout the whole plant or the whole tree. Is it wrong to be angry? The Bible tells us to be angry and sin not, not to let the sun go down on our wrath. There are certain things in our lives that should make us angry. There are certain things in our culture that should make us angry. Jesus got angry, but he didn't sin. But then we see that the heart of Jesus was also grieved. And this was in the present tense. He is continually grieved. If you have the New American Standard Version or translation of the Bible, you would notice every once in a while you would see an asterisk next to a word. A lot of times in my Bible, that little asterisk or the little star is next to the word he said. Because literally it would be he is saying. And so that just explains the translation of that word. Here it is that he is continually grieving. Isaiah 53 verse 3 tells us he, Jesus, was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and like one from whom men hid their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. Acquainted with grief, he knows our hearts. He cried out when he came to Jerusalem that day in Matthew 23, 37, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. When he approached Jerusalem in Luke 19, 41, he saw the city and wept over it. He sees us and he grieves over us. What kind of a heart do you have? We should desire as Christians a humble heart, like the man with the withered hand. We should not want the hard heart like the condemning Pharisees. We should desire that holy heart like Jesus, filled with compassion for others. As I mentioned, Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Tim Chellis in his book wrote, does God allow his people to express anger? Yes, he does. But only under these circumstances. You are reacting against actual sin. That you are more concerned with the offense against God than the offense against yourself. And you are expressing your anger in ways consistent with Christian character. So we do have to be careful in the way we express that anger. We do need hearts that are angry against sin, but we also need, as Jesus had, we need to grieve over sin. Someone said, Lord, break my heart with the things that break your heart. Psalm 119, verse 136 says, my eyes stream tears because your people do not know your law. And then we need to come with humble hearts. James 4:8 says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. James could have been talking to the Pharisees of Jesus' day. And then as we come to the table of the Lord, let's remember what Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 11:23-32. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, in the night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Therefore, whoever eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. But a man must examine himself, and in so doing he is to eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks judgment to himself, if he does not judge the body rightly. For this reason, many among you are weak and sick, and a number sleep. But if we judged ourselves rightly, we would not be judged. But when we are judged, we are disciplined by the Lord, so that we will not be condemned along with the world. So as we come to his table this morning, think about your life. Think about your relationship with him. Are we coming today like the man with the withered hand, with something that needs to be made right with the Lord? Are we coming as Pharisees who are willing to say, well, I've never done anything wrong. I've never sinned. I don't need salvation. Come with that humble heart, examining your heart. Ask him if there is anything that you need to make right with him. There's plenty of time during this service to examine your heart. There's plenty of times, quiet times, in this service to pray. And I'd encourage you to do some business with God this morning as we take the bread that is a symbol of his body and the juice, a symbol of his blood.